Web Services.
Welcome to the CloudOnNote podcast. My name is Michael.
And my name is Andreas.
We are two brothers focusing on AWS. Every other week, one of us prepares the topic of the podcast. This week, Andreas has prepared the topic for us, and I have no clue what the topic is about. But before we start with the new topic, Andreas, do you remember what we talked about last time?
Yes, absolutely, I do. You talked about selling software as a service products on the AWS marketplace and explained the process to integrate the AWS marketplace into your product. That was very interesting, I think.
Okay, thank you. So what's the topic of this podcast, Andreas?
So I've prepared a review of Amazon Aurora Serverless, so the cloud-native relational database from AWS. And we will have a look at the details of this new service offering. It's not really that new. It has been around for more than a year now. But recently, AWS announced the Postgres compatibility. And so that's why I choose the topic for today.
Oh, very good. So I'm actually a user of Aurora Serverless, but I use the MySQL compatible edition. So that's very cool. Why not get started?
Yeah, so let me start with introducing Amazon Aurora Serverless. So the main thing that is interesting and different about Aurora Serverless compared to other relational database services is that it consists of two different layers. So one is the storage layer. The important thing of the storage layer is it replicates the data among multiple availability zones by default. And the storage layer also scales automatically from 10 gigabyte to 64 terabytes. So you don't really have to manage the storage at all. It just scales automatically in case of throughput and also in case of the storage capacity. So both of them scale almost endlessly. Yeah, that's a very big part of Aurora Serverless. It's also the same for Aurora. So this is the storage layer. And by the way, the storage layer gets replicated, as I said. It gets replicated among three availability zones, two times per availability zone. So I have six replicas of the data when you store it with Aurora Serverless. So that's kind of impressive, I think. And then the second part, it has always been the problem when building scalable systems that you build an auto-scaling group with EC2 instances, or you use Fargate, and the application layer scales. So that's kind of easy to achieve with AWS. But it has always been a problem to also scale your database, so to make sure it dynamically adapts to the workload. And this is what the second layer of Aurora Serverless is doing, the compute layer. It scales your database, the compute part of your database, dynamically. So it scales from zero, really zero, so pausing your database, to a database machine with 64 cores and around 500 gigabyte of memory. So that's the compute layer. And the important stuff here with Aurora Serverless is that you don't have to scale the compute layer yourself. It works automatically out of the box. So it's, you could say, it's auto-scaling for the compute layer of your database as well. And that's, I think, an absolute game changer.
Andreas, do you know what kind of metrics AWS uses for scaling? So how do they detect if they have to scale up or scale down?
Yes. So if I remember it correctly, I have read or watched a video where someone said that they scale based on CPU load and number of database connections at the moment. Okay. And yeah, so this is Aurora Serverless. So I think the interesting part is that the compute layer scales automatically. Before that, with RDS and also RDS Aurora, we had to select an instance type, and this was then indicating the size of the compute layer. And now with Aurora Serverless, this scales automatically as well. So this is, quite interesting. And maybe two hints. So one is, if you are interested in more details about how the storage layer and the database works, we are linking an article from Werner Vogel, CTO of Amazon. He has written up what's behind that. And we're also linking a very interesting talk from AWS reInvent last year to get more information about that.
So Andreas, how does the scaling of the compute layer actually work? So do I have multiple kind of instances, a cluster of Aurora, or how does it work?
Not really. So at the moment, at least, so that's what is implemented right now, is the compute layer scales vertically. So they're actually scaling the size of the database instance. And what Aurora Serverless is doing is they have put quite a lot of effort into making that scaling happen without any effect on your workloads. So they pre-warm the instance, they're switching over with a proxy, and that's kind of what Aurora Serverless is doing. So it does not scale horizontally. It does not add read replicas or something like that. It just scales the database instance vertically automatically.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, then this also means that I have, like, in terms of high availability, I have only a single instance. So the storage layer is replicated across multiple ACs, but the compute layer isn't. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So that's one of the downsides of Aurora Serverless at the moment. So AWS calls it single ASET with multi-ASET failover. So what that means is, yeah, you have one instance running at a time. And as you said, the storage layer is replicated among availability zones. But in case of an outage, so the instance or even the whole availability zones, Aurora Serverless needs to spin up a new machine, a new instance, and it does that automatically. But it takes some time until the new machine can take over. And you might even run into capacity problems in case of an availability zone outage, for example.
Okay, I see. So you mentioned that you can scale down the compute layer to zero. Can you go into more details here?
Yes. So that is what Aurora Serverless is calling pausing the database. So there are applications that do not get any traffic or any workloads at all during times of a day. So which means in that case with Aurora Serverless, you can really turn off the database. So the storage, of course, stays online all the time. Your data is stored, but you're pausing the compute layer of the database. So which has a really big cost effect because you don't pay for resources that you're not using. So that is, you can enable pausing Aurora Serverless databases, which means then the database scales to zero. By default, it scales to zero after 5 minutes without any database queries, database statements coming in. And then you're asking probably, how does it resume the database? So if it pauses, what happens if the next request comes in? So let's say someone goes to your web application and wants to log in. What happens then is Aurora Serverless is automatically resuming the database. So the data request comes in on a proxy layer, and then they turn on the database. And this takes some time. It takes seconds. So from my experience, it's something about 15 seconds. I've also, we will link a link to a blog post from Peter. He has actually measured the activation time more accurately. And his results is it takes around something from 20 seconds, but sometimes it takes even longer than that. So you have to deal with that. So the first request that comes in has a huge latency. That's the downside of pausing the database.
Yes, I can also confirm this. So 50 seconds is pretty fast. So because I'm using Aurora Serverless in a project, and we also pause the database because the application is not used by many users, and it's an internal application. And I see, so sometimes we have a timeout on the load balancer, I think it's 30 seconds, and sometimes it's not fast enough to start within 30 seconds. So the query basically times out. So yeah, 15 seconds is pretty good, but it is also possible to be more than 30 seconds in the situations that I observed. Okay.
Yeah, so this might be a showstopper if you have an application that is customer facing, for example, and I don't know, you're losing a sale when your website does not respond in a certain amount of time. But I think still pausing the database is valid for internal applications, testing environments, stuff like that. And depending on your workload, you can achieve huge cost effects by just turning down the compute layer of your database.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, then your recommendation is to enable pausing for internal applications and maybe test environments. But in most production environments, you would not turn it on.
Yeah, depends on the business impact that this latency has. So I think it's something you have to evaluate and make a decision based on the current workload that you're thinking about. I think there is no easy answer probably to this.
Okay, I see. So you already mentioned that is by pausing the database, we can save money. So can you dive a little bit deeper into what kind of costs are associated with using Aurora Serverless? So what's the pricing model?
Yeah. So I will not talk about pricing of the storage. So the storage, you have to pay for the storage that you use with Aurora. So this is one part that you need to pay for. The more interesting part with Aurora Serverless is what you need to pay for the compute layer of your database. And this is what I think is interesting here. And I made a comparison between Aurora, let's call it Aurora Classic, so without the serverless part, where you need to provision the database instance type, and Aurora Serverless. And if you do that, you could say roundabout, you pay 50% more when using Aurora Serverless compared to Aurora Classic with the assumption that your workload runs 24/7 with a constant workload. Yeah, so there's a surcharge for using Aurora Serverless with about 50% on the compute layer compared to Aurora Classic. So this is quite a lot. Actually, I don't know. I can't think of a really reason why AWS charges 50% more for the compute layer here. I can't imagine that there is really infrastructure involved that justifies this surcharge. But yeah, let's see. Maybe we see cost reductions in the future. And so you could say, okay, wow, that's a big surcharge on the Aurora pricing. So is it still valid to use Aurora Serverless? And yeah, the answer to that is it is. It depends heavily on your workload. So the question is how steady or how unsteady is your workload? And are there times during a day where you can really scale down or even pause your database? And if you're able to do so, then there's huge cost effects, of course. So I have come up with a very simple example. So let's think about an application that is only used on working days from 9 to 5. So yeah, a business application, let's say the accounting application where your employees enter their transactions. So in this case, you can either totally or almost turn down the database, the compute part of the database, outside the time frame from 9 to 5 on working days. Yeah? And let's compare that to Aurora. So with Aurora, you have to run the compute layer 24/7. So if I do that comparison, so compare Aurora Classic that runs 24/7 with Aurora Serverless that only runs 8 hours for about 20 days per month, then you only pay a third of the compute layer costs when using Aurora Serverless. Yeah. So yeah, what it comes to, it really depends on your workload. Mm-hmm. Is it unsteady? Do you have times during the day where there is no database usage at all? And you have to calculate that or at least make an estimation before switching from Aurora to Aurora Serverless. Because you might see big cost effects. You might have cost reductions or you might even pay much more than what you did before, depending on your workload.
Okay, I see. Okay, so what else is important? So you mentioned or we discovered that there's only a single instance running. So what does this exactly mean? And also, how does this affect the SLA that RDS provides?
Yeah, so we already discussed that it's single ASET with multi-ASET failover. So the database should be able to recover from availability zone outages with a certain amount of time that is not specified. But there's one important thing. So there is AWS guarantees an SLA for Aurora, but this does only apply to clusters that are run in multi-ASAT mode, so that have at least two instances running in different availability zones. And as Aurora Serverless is only running a single instance, Aurora Serverless is not covered by any SLA at the moment. So that's important to know when you think about using Aurora Serverless in production. Usage is not covered by any SLA from AWS at the moment.
Okay. And I can also imagine, because with Aurora, you can have read replicas. And I think if I compare the maximum size of Aurora Serverless, that also seems to be the maximum size of a single instance in Aurora. So I can achieve much higher read query rates with Aurora Serverless because of the replicas. So if I have really high or like high volume workloads, then Aurora Serverless might hit the limit much earlier than I could achieve with Aurora using read replicas. Is that correct?
Yes. So with Aurora Serverless, we don't have replication at the moment. So we don't have any read replicas, which is a huge benefit of Aurora Classic, actually. So at the moment, you can only scale one instance vertically. So that's all that Aurora Serverless can do. There are no read replicas, so you cannot distribute incoming read requests among a fleet of database instances. So that limits the scaling capability of Aurora Serverless.
Okay, I see. So, okay, so I don't have any questions at the moment. So what else is important?
Let's continue. So we discussed some downsides of using Aurora Serverless. And let's talk about two things that are really great when using Aurora Serverless. So one thing, the listeners probably remember us complaining about clumsy security defaults within the last episodes. So for example, with EC2 Instance Connect. That is not true for Aurora Serverless. So the defaults from a security perspective are really great. So let me give you two examples. So for example, there is no way to configure a public IP address for Aurora Serverless. So you cannot, there's no way you can make your database publicly accessible from the internet, which is a very bad practice from a security point of view. So there's no way to do it. I think that's really great because both of us, we have seen customers doing that, yeah, bringing their databases accessible from the internet. I think that's not a good practice. So it's not possible with Aurora Serverless. So a very good default from a security point of view. And the other default that you can also not change is Aurora Serverless is always encrypting data addressed with a key from KMS by default. So you cannot change that behavior as well. So it's encryption addressed that you cannot change. So encrypt everything that you store.
I have bad news for you, Andreas, because I already saw a client exposing Aurora Serverless to the internet because there are MySQL proxies available. So they basically put a MySQL proxy in front of Aurora Serverless, so it was again possible to access it from the internet.
Sure, you can build your own ways, but it's at least not possible with what AWS brings. Yeah.
Okay, so what is the other great feature that you talked about?
Yeah, so the other interesting feature is Aurora Serverless, and this is only true for Aurora Serverless, not for Aurora Classic, is offering a RESTful API for interacting with the database, so sending SQL queries to the database over a RESTful API. So that's very interesting. And why is that interesting? So it's interesting for serverless applications. Because with serverless applications, we always have trouble managing a pool of database connections, because with AWS Lambda and other services, we are in a world where we don't have long-running processes. They get terminated, and it gets really clumsy to manage long-living database connections. And it's typically quite expensive to open new database connections. So this is because of that, it's very good news that we now have a REST API that we can actually use to talk to our relational database. That has not been possible before.
Okay, that sounds great. And I think it also kind of is related to the announcement. So at the last reInvent, AWS announced that they will improve the Lambda startup performance in VPCs, which was a big problem before as well. So it takes like 10 seconds for a Lambda function to start up in a VPC to connect to the database. And now I think this week or last week, they actually announced that they are now rolling out this optimization to the Lambda functions that are existing. So is this something that you, or do you consider this as an alternative to the data API, or what do you think? Is the data API still a valid thing to use, or what's your opinion here?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So the VPC integration of AWS Lambda improved a lot last week. So it's not needed to have a single Elastic Network interface for each Lambda instance now. But still, I think managing database connections in your Lambda functions is a hassle. And so I think it's interesting to have a RESTful API, which is much more, which fits much better the approach that a serverless application is working on. So I think it's still a very interesting feature. Maybe two important limitations of the data API. So it only works for MySQL Aurora, and it's only available in a few regions. So it's not supported in all Aurora serverless regions at the moment.
Okay. So what I also like about the data API is that it's available in the graphical, like in the management console. And I can imagine that they are able now to create like an experience like with DynamoDB, that you can, like in the management console, you can see the tables and the content of the tables, because working with RDS is at the moment it's more difficult than it could and should be, because you always have to connect to the database and then you need bastion host and whatever. So it's really complicated to get access to the database to just look at the data. So that's also something that I'm looking forward to what they can now do with this functionality to improve the usability here for just looking at the data to see what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we talked a lot about features that exist, and is there something that is missing? So what are your kind of, so when you're using Aurora serverless, what's missing?
Okay. So yeah, we talked about the biggest feature that is missing, and this is support of replicas. So we talked about that this is important for reliability, for being able to do hot standby and failover. And it also limits the capabilities to scale your database with read replicas. So yeah, this is, I think, the biggest limitation at the moment, that Aurora serverless does not support replication. And a few others, Aurora serverless does not support loading or storing data from or to S3. So I wanted to use that feature to actually import a database, so to migrate from another database system to Aurora serverless. And unfortunately, you cannot use S3 to ship the data from your old database to Aurora serverless. That's a feature that is available in Aurora Classic. So that is missing. Another feature that is missing, an important feature, is point in time recovery, which is called backtrack with Aurora Classic. It's not available for Aurora serverless. We don't have support for multi-master clusters with Aurora serverless, also a feature that is available with Aurora Classic, so that you can use to have two clusters and synchronize the data between both of these clusters. And maybe another one that is interesting and missing is RDS performance insights is also not available for Aurora Serverless. And there is even more that is missing. So depending on what you're trying to achieve with Aurora, we put a link in the show notes that points you to the limitations of Aurora Serverless in the AWS documentation. A few other things are missing as well.
Okay, so we talked a lot about Aurora Serverless now. So is there a way for the listeners to, like, if they are interested in the details, so where can they find all this information?
So we will put a link to a blog post that covers the same topic than this podcast episode in the show notes. So you can reread through almost everything that we have discussed in this podcast episode. So that's what we always do. There's always a blog post for each podcast episode as well. We'll find all the information, all the links and everything as well. So just go to the show notes. We'll find all the links in there.
Okay, cool. So at the beginning, you said that this is going to be a review of Aurora Serverless. And if I remember correctly, I started reviewing AWS Backup and we kind of came up with this service maturity table where we try to calculate a score for each service to get an idea how mature it is. Is this something that you created for Aurora Serverless as well, Andreas?
Sure, I did. that's the funniest thing to do.
Yes, that's also like where we get a lot of feedback from people. So that seems to help people to understand how mature the service is. So that's pretty cool. So do you want to introduce your maturity table for us?
I do. So our service maturity table has 9 different criteria. And each criteria is evaluated with a score, which goes from 0, which is really not mature, to 10, which is, this is a very mature service that you can use in production without any limitations. So the first criteria is feature completeness. I rated that with a 2 because I think there are many important features missing, most of all, replication. Aurora Serverless supports tags for grouping and billing, so this is a 10. Also, CloudFormation Terraform support is available, so the score here is also a 10. CloudWatch events check a 10 as well. IAM granularity, so the possibility to define IAM policies with tags, resource restriction, and so on. So it's almost perfect. So I rated it with a 9. There's one small limitation with the data API where you cannot really limit to certain clusters. That's a very small piece that is missing. So there's no AWS config support. So if you do governance and validation of your AWS infrastructure, that is missing. CloudTrail is available. Availability in regions. So Aurora Serverless is available in many regions, but not in all of them. So I rated that with an 8. And then a big problem, there is no SLA for Aurora Serverless. So this gets a 0 score. And then when you summarize all of that, the total maturity score for Aurora Serverless is 6.6. This is what we calculate as the maturity score of AWS Serverless.
Okay, and 6.6 is not bad. So that probably means that you can kind of, or your summary is that you can actually use Aurora Serverless, and there will be some problems, mostly with the replicas. But besides that, it's a good option.
Yes. So we're already using it in production, as you mentioned. So we have applications that are using it already. But I think there are important limitations that you need to think about before bringing that into an architecture. So I think, yeah, that's true. You can use it. It's production ready. But keep in mind the limitations that we discussed. So the most important, the replication. So problem with there's no SLA and you don't have any read replicas. Otherwise, I think Aurora Serverless is really an exciting service, especially if you have an unsteady workload where you can really scale down your database during significant time spans of a month. because this has really big cost effects then. And this is something you cannot achieve easily with any other database offering on AWS and also other cloud providers. Yeah, so that's the summary and the review of Aurora Serverless. And if you want to see Aurora Serverless in action, you might want to check out our book, Rapid Docker on AWS, because the architecture that we discuss in this book makes use of Aurora Serverless. So if you want to see code examples, CloudFormation examples, and so on for Aurora Serverless, check out Rapid Docker on AWS. You will find a link to that in the show notes as well. And it allows you to spin up a web application based on ECS, Fargate, and Aurora Serverless within a few minutes.
Okay, thank you very much, Andreas, for your very detailed review. So this was very interesting as well, this was very interesting for me. I'm already a user of the service, but I still learned something because, to be honest, I didn't know that it is a single instance kind of deployment. So that was new for me. Very interesting.
Yeah, so let's close this episode with asking you, our listeners, for feedback. So please send us your feedback on this podcast episode. You can do that via Twitter. So you'll find our Twitter handles in the show notes. Send us an email, hello@cloudonout.io, or just review this podcast in your favorite podcast player. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much, Andreas, for preparing the topic.
Bye. Speak to you soon.